Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Broadway Breakdown. I am one of your two hosts, Matt Koplik.
And I am your other host, John Stephen Wiscavage. Yes, that is Stephen with a PH. You heard that correctly. My enunciation is so amazing. Which brings me to my first point.
Tangents extreme, everybody.
Cue sad music again, a la the second episode. Much as we were saying last episode that it felt like it was our inaugural episode or a return back, it truly did feel that way when I went back and listened to the tape and heard how my creepy little friend Mr. Like reared his ugly head in so many. Like, I know that it's not a habit that I've dropped completely. I know that I still have used it way more times than any 20-year-old man should be using the word like. However, I just, last episode, listening to it, I hang my head in shame.
Oh my god, okay. You, first of all, you fucking dick, because, okay, for everyone out there, before we started recording, I went, John, what'd you think of the episode? He goes, I have notes. And I was so nervous. I went, oh no, John, he hated everything that I did. And he's like, no, I'll talk about it on the podcast. And now that you said that, I want to punch you, because that was way too much stress for a.m. in the morning.
Listen, you're welcome. I'm here for the drama. I'm here for this, mama. I want conflict. I want beats. I want obstacles. I want a strong female lead.
I want inclusion of all ethnicities and handicaps. I want it to be a utopia of musical theater gayness.
Actually, I do want that. However, I just used that phrase, strong female lead, but I read this little blurb this week that was a little, it might have even just been a meme, but it was a very powerful meme to me. And it was about why do we keep calling strong female leads like it's such a specific rare thing. Like, it's very rare where they're like, oh, there it was. It's very rare that some
rare bird. You take out your binoculars and here we have the rare breed of a film or TV show with a strong female lead. Let's see what it does.
Well, right. But you never, it's so true. Like it was pointed out that it's not a term that's used for men. You don't often hear someone go, oh man, yeah, look at that actor. Look at, Hemsworth. Look at one of the Hemsworth brothers. Look at how much of a strong male lead they are. You're just like, ah, John, stop saying like. You are just, in accordance with your thoughts, thinking the thoughts of, that is a man who is strong, but I don't have to say that. Oh, words. Words fail.
Words fail. I know what you mean. I think because for so long that the norm was that it was usually a male protagonist and the female character was on the side, that in the following years it became a rare item. And but I feel like it has become way more constant now that you're right. It doesn't need to be pointed out as much, only because I think that there are projects aplenty with quote-unquote strong female leads. TV alone, I can name two or three dozen shows that have had strong female leads or are still running with strong female leads, and it's gotten to the point where I just go, I mean, that's almost pretty the constant.
Well, it just seems as if it is trying to box women into categories that are just not really relevant or kosher anymore. Even if you look at, last night I watched the movie Room for the first time. Have you seen it?
I have not. But I staunchly support Brie Larson and all of her endeavors.
Me so, also Brie, as well. You have my vote. Me also as well with that. So I watched that last night, and the term popped up into my head because here is a woman who severely abused. I mean, she was held captive for 7 years, and I don't think anyone's ever described her character, or maybe they have. Maybe they have described it as a strong female lead in this movie. But if they haven't described her as that, that is exactly what she is. Yes, she is. People could quote unquote call her the victim, can quote unquote say that she, you know, is weak, or you know, she is a hurt little abused creature. But no, she's not. She was strong, and to survive all that and to survive the awfulness, it's a term, strong female lead. Ever since I read that little blurb this week, I've really been thinking about it and thinking about how that's, you know, we don't say, oh, look at that feathered flying winged bird. You know, it's all just redundant. It's all encompassed already in that. And so I am starting the movement today. So follow me, children. That we know. Mama is no longer using the term strong female lead, because that is just implied. Because females are what? Strong as hell.
As hell. I see what you mean now. For a second, I thought you meant strong female lead in the sense that the role is strong. Like, it's a complex, hearty role. But you mean strong, like, powerful, strong-willed kind of role. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think it kind of means both what I'm talking about. But I think the term was invented in a sexist time. I mean, mm-hmm. not that we are out of a sexist time. Let me tell you. Female listeners. I do not mean that in any way of like, oh my God, we've gotten rid of it.
Yet are we out of the woods? Yes. Yet are we out of the woods?
No, yeah. Taylor, we're not out of the woods. There's so many men, but fuck yeah, time's up. So smash the patriarchy. I mean, I support you all, but I am, mm-hmm. I'm taking one further stand. And I'm so done with that sexist term. Females are strong as hell to begin with, so that is just. I love a show with a female lead. See, I want to say strong female lead, but it's like it's embedded into our brains. I love a show with a female lead.
I like a show with a complex lead. Mm. I like with many layers. So it's actually interesting you say that, because twice I got into an argument with someone about Hamilton, because one was a female, one was a male, and both were trying to argue to me that Hamilton was actually sexist because the women in the show only are there to assist the men. And I argued with them that they're right in the sense that that is sort of the women roles in Hamilton are connected to the story through the men of the story, but that is more sort of through, I don't want to say dramatic, what's the word I'm looking for? Almost like a dramatic shortcut, like sort of how Marsha Norman said when she adapted The Color Purple into the musical, she was like, I decided which characters got to stay based on who interacts with Celie, because she's the protagonist. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like Lin-Manuel did the same thing with Hamilton, of like, I decided who stays, because it's so, like, so many characters in history, and he's like,
all right, and it's called it's about Hamilton, so
yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Spoiler alert, and show kind of revolves around him.
Exactly. Even Aaron Burr is really in the show connected through his relationship to Hamilton. Yeah. And so yes, the women roles in the show are connected through Alexander, but I argued that I don't think the show is sexist because of the respect and intelligence it treats the female characters.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, is truly how you would argue the sexism of a show. And I got into an argument about that with someone else on Facebook, not Hamilton specifically, but about other shows. Because I think that there are certain shows that we don't look, that the general theater-going public hasn't considered sexist in the past, but I do, basically because of the broad strokes in which it paints its female characters. Like, when I came out of School of Rock, I was shocked at how vague the female roles in the show were, just like how broad they were in their stereotypes. I was like, really? At the time, I think it was 2016, 2015 it came out. I was like, really? In this day and age? Like, that's how we're painting our female roles?
I've never seen that show, so I don't.
I mean, it's a lot of fun, and I mean, as an artistic child, I watched it seeing parents accept their artistic children, got a little verklempt. Like the show works. It's a good show, but yeah. The two biggest female roles in the show are definitely given the shorthand. Is that the term I'm looking for?
Sure, sounds right.
Rolls off the tongue. But I sort of feel the same way about most Weber shows in that sense. Sunset and Evita. As much as I love Evita, but more sort of for its diva worshipness, both shows kind of treat their female characters in a very broad sense that I don't think is fair to the actress, because it's up to the actress then to fill in all the blanks that the writers have not done.
Yeah. My show is currently playing right next to a production at the Pittsburgh Public Theater, which is a super well-respected, amazing regional theater. They're doing Forum, and it's been interesting because I guess Forum hasn't been done in Pittsburgh in a while, and it's getting great reviews. Everyone in it is so fucking ridiculously talented. But even my friends who are in the cast have been noting that it's just so interesting doing this show that is based off of such sexist points of views. I mean,
there's 100%.
There's a fucking song in it called Everybody Oughta Have a Maid. Like, yes, mm-hmm. it's tongue-in-cheek, and yes, it's satire, but question marks arisen.
Yeah. And with something like Forum, I think what makes it tricky in this day and age is that, like, I'm all for having every type of character out there. I'm not saying, like, every character in every show needs to be, you know, smart and strong and there are so many different kinds of people out in this world. So, you know, shows can reflect that. And Forum is a farce, and it is very tongue-in-cheek, as you said. But I think it's the fact that there isn't really a single woman role in that show that is even slightly flattering. Like, you have the two closest female leads you have. One is basically a stone-cold middle-aged bitch that everyone finds repulsive. And then the other one is an airheaded bimbo. Rest are just exactly the same. It's, you know, my devil, my angel on both shoulders.
Yeah, I am both of those. I am all she.
Yeah. we are every woman, John.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's I get that. And as much as I do love Forum, because, you know, when it comes down to brass tacks, it is exceptionally well crafted in terms of its representation of women. Obviously, being a farce, it's going to be lacking, but it is the fact that there is, like, really not a single moment for a woman to just kind of be like, hey, we have opinions too. It's like all the opinions come from the men in that show.
I mean, this is in the realm of doing what I do best, but I have a tangent from this tangent.
I was gonna say, have we not been tangenting?
That is just V on brand. Mm-hmm. On Sunday night, I saw a little experimental theater show about feminism. This little show called Wicked. I believe it was a national tour of this little piece called Wicked, maybe. Yeah, I saw Sunday night. Sunday night I saw the national tour of Wicked. Is what I'm saying, Matt.
Jesus, that was the longest bit I think you've ever done.
Just yes and me, seriously though. But
I didn't know how to. I just wanted to see you go. I was like, where the fuck is he going with this?
Burn.
I did. I hope that you burn.
I've never seen the national tour of it. I've only ever seen the Broadway company multiple times. Duh.
Hair flip.
Yeah, hair flip. It's so interesting to see the national tour of this show because there are actual different, like, there's, like, different staging and different elements, and I actually kind of like the set and places a little more. Like, it was weird how different it was and how I just didn't expect it to be different. It was fun. I mean, I just enjoy that show so much. It was definitely the eighth show of Wicked on an, like, you know, at 7 o'clock on a Sunday night on Super Bowl Sunday. I have nary heard tempo so quick on that show. I mean, literally, it was like, the wizard and I Night button. Like, it literally was like, like, it was so fast. I was like, oh my, hello.
Yeah, everyone just wanted to get the fuck out.
Yeah. That being said, I mean, Wicked just still stands true. But I don't know if this is on the way that it is on Broadway, but did you know that, and maybe it's just because the first time I saw it, it was original cast, and maybe this even happened on Broadway the other times that I saw it, but do you know that now, at least on the tour, the Elphaba and Glinda's take bows at the same time? Like, they don't, no one gets, they get last bow together, at least in this production I saw. I did not know
after,
that was a
after,
thing.
You mean after the whole company bows, then they bow again?
No, like, they come out together and shared a bow.
Yeah, I from what I recall with the original, because I also saw it with the OBC, no big deal.
Kristen Chenoweth blew a kiss at me right next to my girlfriend of a year and a month.
Oh my god. I actually, one of my most prized possessions is my original Broadway cast playbill of Wicked signed by every single principal company member. It's... Because I think I went to the last week of preview, so everyone, it was before, like, all that, everyone was calling out every other day, so everyone was still in it at the time. But, and then I saw it one more time when Jennifer Lawrence took over for Kristen Chenoweth, and I haven't seen the show since, so that's, that was, like, 13 years ago.
That's a long time.
I should go back, but, yeah, they...
It's a great show.
It's so much fun, and I love that score. I listen to this score all the time at the gym.
Yeah me too.
It's a side note. I do know that Kristen Chenoweth and Idina Menzel came out together.
Yes,
I remember that
as well.
I think they did. I think they each gave each other a separate bow and then bowed once more together. Yeah, I think that's. I think that's how it's always been, because the biggest theme of the show, I guess, is sisterhood and, you know, unifying against a world that is out. You know, that's stacked against you.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I don't know. I just found it very interesting because, I mean,
it's probably the only show on Broadway right now where the last two bows are women.
Oh, what a thought. You're probably correct with that, aren't you? Unless, I haven't seen Once on This Island, unfortunately.
No, Once on This Island is the entire company.
I was going to say, it's a company bow? Yeah,
it's a company bow. I mean, it's the circle and the square.
Right.
Everyone has to do four bows to each side. So, like, if everyone took a bow, you'd be there for 4 hours.
Oh, my God.
Although, I'm sure Mean Girls, when Mean Girls finally opens, that the last couple of bows will be women.
Oh, it better be. I mean, who else?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's going to probably be, like, the last three bows will most likely be Janice, followed by Regina, followed by Katie.
Yeah.
I'm just spitballing here, based on what I think.
No, that's what I would imagine as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is, I mean, this is where my brain goes. This is the important things that my brain also thinks about in society is who gets last bow in Wicked.
And, I mean, you and me both, bub.
I mean.
What were you going to say?
No, it's okay. I don't really have anything to say other than I just, God bless my therapist.
God bless your therapist.
Yeah. So I saw Wicked. I also saw a David Lindsay Abaire play this past week. It was a final dress for a local theater company here in Pittsburgh called The Devil Inside. I had never read it or heard of it. It's a weird show. Very funny. Very weird.
Sounds like classic Abaire. I haven't. David Lindsay Abaire he's Rabbit Hole. He's Good People. He's he also did Fuddy Mears. I think that's him, right?
Yeah, and he did the book for Cinderella. He did the book for
David Lindsay Abaire didn't do Cinderella. That was
Douglas Carter Beam. Jesus Christ.
David Lindsay Abaire actually did the book and the lyrics for Shrek.
Yes, that is what I meant. I'm so sorry.
I gotta say, his lyrics for Shrek, I think, are so good and very impressive for a first time lyricist. Like, I'm not the biggest fan of the show Shrek, but I think that score is, like, better than it has any right to be. But it's Janine DeSori, so what do you expect?
It's me, Fiona.
Last week I saw Band's Visit for a second time, because once is never enough.
No.
My dad was in town, and he wanted to see it, so we went. And Something that I read recently was John Cantor talking about the score of Light in the Piazza, saying that he loved it so much he wanted to bathe in it,
which is same.
And it makes sense because the one word I would describe the Light in the Piazza score is like it's very liquid in a way. I felt the same way watching Band's Visit for the second time. Like when Omar Sharif started, I was like, ugh, I just want to like swim in this song.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, it was so lovely.
I've expressed my thoughts about her pelvic movement during that song. I think it's a masterclass. And
absolutely.
She should win a Tony for her pelvic movement alone.
I concur. I've never thought I'd be so enraptured by a woman's pelvic movement, but girl. Katrina Lenk, she does it.
She's the missing Lenk.
She is not the weakest Lenk.
She is the strongest Lenk. I wonder if she's on LinkedIn.
Oh no. We're not doing this. Go away. Would you say that she's a strong female lead?
I would, but I wouldn't.
I did see that. I'm seeing Encores on Friday, which I'm very excited about. They're doing a concert. Actually, so tangent time, but this one is actually related to the Broadway. So here we go. Friday Encores is doing like a concert called Hey Look Me Over, which is a compilation of shows that they have not done yet but would like to do. So there's some scores that you've heard of, like Mac and Mabel. Yep. Scores that you haven't, like Green Willow. Like, who the fuck cares about Green Willow? But there's one show that's missing in this lineup that I am slightly furious about, because it implies to me that Encores doesn't intend to do it, which is a little known gem that I'm obsessed with. John knows I'm obsessed with it. Smile.
They've never done Smile.
They haven't done Smile. And I'm now getting impatient because they're now starting to do 80s shows. Like, they've done Merrily, they did Big River, and now they're about to do Grand Hotel and Me and My Girl this year. So I'm like, okay, you're clearly looking into 80s now for like shows for the canon.
Yeah.
I'm like, why not do Smile? And I say this having been up until 3 a.m. last night writing for a couple of different things. And then to sort of like kind of clear my brain, I went down some YouTube rabbit holes, and someone has ownership of the Lincoln Center archives recording of the Broadway production of Smile. What? And they posted a couple of the numbers up, and the only Smile that I get to listen to is the Samuel French demo that they did, which is like 7 cast members and 2 synths, and I love it so much, but it's not a Broadway sound. So to listen to that score with a 25 piece orchestra and 20 girls is like insane. So I was listening to that all last night, and I'm like, this is one of the best scores from the 80s. It is Marvin Hamlisch and Howard Ashman. Mm-hmm. Howard Ashman's only straight to Broadway show, and you know there are some issues with the Broadway version, but when the show closed, they kind of revamped it and retooled it for licensing, and the licensed version is pretty great and a really light satire that I love. And I was looking through the script and listening to the score, and I was like, this is a show that Encores not only should do because it's good and because it needs a second life, but it's very relevant to sort of this moment in American history.
Yeah.
I mean just from a pop culture reference, like, we are right now very much on the reboot train. You know, we have Will and Grace, we have Roseanne, and
we've
Arrested Development,
Fuller House.
Fuller House, yeah. Like, we're America's even.
We want the good times back.
We do. Well, everybody wants, you know, the good times back, whether it's stupid Trumpers or it's, you know,
Sherry
normal
Renee
people.
Scott, yeah.
Yeah, Sherry Renee Scott wants. Oh my God.
Sorry.
I'm
actually not disappointed in myself for making that joke. I'm disappointed in you for not getting it soon enough.
I blocked out every new song to the Little Mermaid musical, so good day. True to my gay form, I only recognize the Howard Ashman songs.
Smart
cookie. But I acknowledge your reference, and I tip my hat, and I'm gonna move on. You're welcome. But because we're sort of in this whole reboot situation and wanting pining for a time lost, let's say, and even like some of our newer stuff like Stranger Things or the It movie harks back to the 80s as a time of combination of fake innocence that, you know, never really was, And Smile is sort of encompasses all of that. It's a beauty pageant for these soon-to-be high school seniors who are competing for basically the chance for a college scholarship. And the whole point of the show is, you know, who is a young American Miss? And, you know, she must be smart, she must be talented, she must be beautiful, she has to be polite, she has to, you know, be clean and friendly. And all these girls are presenting that to the judges, but what they truly are is something very different. And it's sometimes something as sinister as sabotaging other contestants, and it's sometimes as basic as, you know, she's smart, but she doesn't think she's beautiful, or, you know, she's insecure, or she comes from a broken home, and that reflects poorly on, you know, her outward appearance and whatnot. And it's very interesting to see, read the script and see all these young girls either truly put their value into what the judges think of them, like the Jodie Benson role that sings Disneyland. Like, when it comes to beauty pageants, she honestly thinks, like, her worth comes from what she's crowned.
Yeah.
And then there are other girls who are 100% just playing the game to, like, get what they want, which I now have a lot more respect for, having been on the Drag Race train for the last year and seeing certain queens rise to the top by playing that competition game. Yeah, to see a Valentina rise so high by playing the game so well, it makes you sort of see how these other girls get as far as they do in this pageant by literally just playing the judges. Like, there is a contestant in the show, her name is Maria Gonzalez, and she's the only Latina character in the pageant, and it's important because it's 1980s California, so it's a lot of white blonde girls and then this one Latina girl who uses her Spanish heritage to her advantage by playing up the Mexican stereotype, and in turn wins the first round of the pageant. But before you think that, like, oh, so maybe she's actually going to change the system by getting inside there, another girl, a totally ruthless, vapid California girl who thinks, you know, basically, like, white blonde girls to the front of the line, please, like, that's our given birthright, totally sabotages her in the second half. Oh. And then ends up making it to the final four, the you know, ruthless girl. Huh. And I feel like that's a great point to underline in the show, especially right now as we go through all these cultural and racial conflicts with our disgusting government. And
I've missed that.
Is
there any of that going on right now?
I don't know what you're talking about, John. That was me just, you know. And one more thing before I close out my rant. This is all going, by the way, into my open letter. This is all going into my open letter to Jack Vidal, the artistic director of Encores. I'm going to write him a fucking letter with all this listed. There's another plot point where the two runners of the pageant, Brenda, who, like, is a former contestant herself, and now she runs the pageant. Her name is literally Brenda. And then her husband, Bob, who's one of the head judges, they have this, like, 10-year-old son who, throughout the first half of the show, is just running around being a little kid. And, like, oh, he's just a little boy, but he's so special. He's in Boy Scouts and whatever. And then you find out that he's acquired a camera and is taking Polaroids of all the girls and trying to sell them to his friends.
What?
And... yeah, and he almost gets away with it, but his father finds out sort of towards the end through, you know, happenstance, and nothing really comes of it. But it's an interesting point of foreshadowing a young boy who's totally going to be a sexual predator when he grows up. Jeez. And it's not done in, like, this super heavy-handed way, but you read it and you're like, oh, like, this is a kid who, by being told he was special because he's an American boy by his parents, is now walking around with all these, you know, human girls at his disposal,
right?
And thinking of how he can use it to his advantage because he's been told, like, that's his right.
Yeah.
And I'm reading, I'm like, holy fuck, like, this show gets a lot right and foreshadows a lot of stuff that's happening right now. Jesus. And I think that's an important thing to see on stage right now, because it's all that, plus it's also highly entertaining as fuck.
Yeah.
Because Howard Ashman was really brilliant at sort of combining high entertainment with deeper messages.
Jack and Betty, eat their words. Jack and Betty, and my mom and her latest. I mean, I'm no great chicks at school, but geez, I'm on my local pageant, right? You think they'd like to be proud or something? Well, who cares, you know? This is my year.
And I'm going to bring it over to you, John.
Yeah, I have a little... I discovered an obsession yesterday. I mean, it's hard because it's a series that's still, you know, episodes are airing. But it's loosely musical theater based because it is starring UMich's very own Darren Criss. Have you watched any of the new season of American Crime Story, The Assassination of Gianni Versace?
I have not, but I've been told that it gives me everything I want.
Here's the thing about that. They're not lying.
No.
It is...
Please.
It is... So, three episodes are available to watch if you have FX or FX mm-hmm. Now. My cast member and I were like, oh, let's see if we want to watch this. He is... Darren, I've always enjoyed Darren Criss just fine enough. I've always thought he's very, very talented. He is very easy on the eyes. Mm-hmm. He is giving a performance in this series. He is, I'm very drawn in to what he is selling. He is, mm-hmm. he plays a complete sociopath and does it so well. Penelope Cruz as Donatella, she's doing wonderful. I believe it's Mark Ruffalo as Gianni. Ricky Martin. The cast is just amazing. And in that very much Ryan Murphy theatrical way, it is a beautiful mix of camp and human... I don't even know. I feel that Ryan Murphy has tapped into this part of humanity that I wouldn't even call human filth. I feel like his voice is highlighting human bile. It is.
Yeah.
It's almost. I don't even. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. What I will say is Ryan Murphy is a creator who I've had problems with in the past.
Same. Oh, same.
Yeah.
I do not worship the ground that he walks on by any means.
No. I will say Ryan Murphy has really exceptional taste when it comes to ideas.
Yes.
And when it comes to other people's work. He has very flawless taste when it comes to, you know, picking other people's projects to promote, or when it comes to, you know, what stories could be told. So, like, yes. I think the idea for American Crime Story is brilliant. The O.J. Simpson season, I think this is a brilliant idea for a season. His actual writing is usually what I have problems with.
Yeah.
Because, well, as you said, he always likes to tap into the bile that is, you know...
That is in all of us. The lowest of
human existence. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's, like...
It's disgusting.
The darkness within all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I will also say that a lot of times, and it's not so much that he's not smart, and it's not that he isn't talented. Sometimes I think he's just a little lazy when it comes to that. So did you ever watch Scream Queens, by the way?
I watched most, no, that's a lie. I watched half of the first season, and then I just, yeah. I it got so convoluted so quickly.
It 100% made no sense.
Yeah. But that's sorry, go ahead.
Oh no! I was saying no. You're absolutely right. It was very convoluted, but it was a great idea for a show that, due to storytelling laziness, and then also due to just laziness of character development, the whole point of Emma Roberts' character is that she's like the worst and she says the worst things, but it almost started to feel like she was a mouthpiece for Ryan Murphy's deepest, darkest, most racist thoughts. Oh. That it. By like episode three, for me, it just started getting uncomfortable when she would say anything.
Don't love that.
And then at some point, like episode 8 or 9, they decide like the girls are going to get woke and be like, we don't need a man to give us our worth, and we're actually going to go eat fries instead of cotton balls for lunch. And it comes out of nowhere. It feels very shoehorned in, especially because the following episode they go back to eating cotton balls.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's almost like they wrote that at that episode to tell everyone, like, see, we understand that this isn't what, you know, women are supposed to do. Yeah. It's like, well, then why go back to what they did? Anyway, so you were saying, though,
no, I was just saying, I think maybe where the strength that came for season one of this series and where the strength for season two is coming from is that if he is writing a fictionalization of true events, I think that's stronger for him, because I think his issue is continuity and tying up the loose ends. So the thing about these situations is the loose ends are already all tied up. He doesn't have to worry about that. He gets to fill in the berserk, crazy, and sometimes like factual things that actually happened that are bizarre and crazy. And he gets to highlight that. And so it's so successful. It's visually stunning. It is. I'm really into it. I really hope this season continues down this road. It's just great storytelling and some great acting. Oh my God. And how could I forget about this? In the last episode, I don't think she's going to be a main character, but I'm sure she's at least going to be in a few more episodes. But the last episode centered around a character, this woman who was a makeup / perfume mogul, who was played by, I think, one of God's gifts to acting, Judith Light. So, I mean,
no,
yes.
Sorry. And, oh God, I screamed. Everybody, sorry.
Well, I was screaming as she was performing. She would just do these beats, and I'd be like, Judith Light. Oh my God,
Judith Light.
It's like, no, I don't even want Judith Light. I want Judith full calorie. Give me the whole full fat Judith.
Oh, you know, my God, you know, please. You know, bitch, give me 20 full servings of heavy fat Judith.
Yes,
oh,
I want full calorie Judith.
Full calorie Judith. Oh, she is one of our national treasures to acting. I adore her so much. If I don't know if this makes me gayer or just like typically gay. I had never seen Who's the Boss, so I did not have that kind of introduction to her. My introduction to her was Ugly Betty.
Oh, I never watched Ugly Betty, which I know. I know you have. I'm sure you have thoughts about that. I have thoughts about it too.
You'll never feel the same way about Vanessa Williams as I do then. That's all I'll say.
Oh, well, that's not true if you read what I posted this week on social media.
Was it about Drag Race?
No, it was about Vanessa Williams. Did you not see what I said? I made a huge...
No. You, girl, you post like 9 things a day. I can only catch up with so much.
Whoa.
Calm down. Not complaining. They're all brilliant, but I can't see every one of them.
Okay, well, let's cue the music in, the sad music for the second time. Today, I just want to share with everyone, in case you didn't see on social media, what I shared this week. I came out...
Admitted, I did see this.
Do not ruin my moment. I can't.
Sorry. Take two.
I came out and admitted that I am a sham. I'm a liar. And for years, Bernadette Peters was not my witch in Into the Woods. Vanessa Williams was. I grew up, like in high school, listening to the revival cast recording, and it's what I loved. And it wasn't until years and years and years later, and I think I even watched the movie once, and I was, you know, I thought, oh, I really love Bernadette, she's great in this role, but I still listen to Vanessa. So, and you know what, I'm proud. I loved her voice on that material, and I'm also now friends with the girl who plays Lil Red on that cast recording, and I...
Molly, went, what's her last name?
Molly Ephraim? I feel like I...
Ephraim?
I don't know. I feel like I always...
You're friends with her.
Why doesn't it always have Molly? I was, you know, we Whatever. Didn't meet, and she was like, hello, my name is Molly Ephraim. Like, I was like, okay, she was just Molly.
That's how you introduce yourself to people.
Well, that's because people don't know how to say my last name at all, and so if I don't say my name is John Wascavage, you do... I mean, gosh, the things I get. And then most people end just calling me Wascavage anyways. People love calling me Wascavage, so...
I just call you Savage.
That's what you should, bitch.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar.
So, yes, Ugly Betty, Vanessa Williams, National Treasure, Judith Light, Ugly Betty.
National Treasure.
American Crime Story. Tangent.
On the note of your confession, first of all, I don't think that it's terrible that Vanessa Williams was your witch for a long time, because she was a great witch.
I thought she was.
I saw the revival. My only issue with the revival is all the changes they made to the score, because I thought none of them were improvements. So I'm like, why improve them? But you know who? You know that Madonna was actually my first Evita.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I had not listened to the Broadway cast album until I was about 13. I I had only had, well, because my dad used to work in film, and he would get a lot of swag from friends who worked for different studios. And when the Evita movie came out, we got the soundtrack for free. And so that's what I used to listen to. And I will say this in defense of the soundtrack, the Broadway score is the best version of that score. The Broadway recording is the best version of that score. It's the most thrilling. It's the most exciting. It's the most interesting. It's the most inventive.
Correct.
The most easy listening, though, is the soundtrack, because by altering all the keys for Madonna and by sort of streamlining some of the orchestrations, it is like, if it is a fun ass recording to run to. Like the Madonna version of Buenos Aires, it's not exciting one bit, but I could run to it on the treadmill for 3 days.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah. Same thing with her Rainbow High, with a bunch of, like, the notes are not great, but like the arrangements, the accompaniments, I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll run to it, I'll dance to it, why not? Like, you could, like, I danced to that at the club, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Oh, I mean, down at the club, I would honestly get down to it.
Absolutely. I would dance at the club to, yes, Madonna's Ava's Final Broadcast.
Yes, me also as well.
Could you just imagine that, if you will? A bunch of shirtless men dancing in a club to "The Choice Was Mine and Mine Completely." Oh, that's Lament.
Wait, but the thing is, I don't think I have to pretend imagine it. Yeah, I'm positive. I have a vivid memory of dancing to techno versions of Evita at clubs in my life already. And I'm only...
What's
21, maybe?
I'm like emotionally 18, but physically I'm...
I have the body of a 29-year-old, but the emotional damage of a 17-year-old, so... Mm-hmm.
And the waist size of a 16-year-old Japanese girl.
Oh my gosh, literally. I have... You know, my cast right now is one of my favorite group of people. They are all so lovely. And there are... Currently, our dressing room is 2 gay men and 2 straight men. And not current. I mean, that's just what's going to be. That's what we are. It's the 4 of us. And it's just very interesting, because the other day, the 2 straight guys were like just talking about diets and all these things and eating healthy and, you know, being very conscious of all of that. And I just turned to one of them and because someone had brought like a whoopie pie in, and they were like, I just like really shouldn't. And I was like, listen, miss, Chinese, like, gymnast, like 16-year-old gymnast from China, eat the damn whoopie pie. Like, seriously, he was so worried. And I was like, your trainer is not going to beat you. You can eat the damn whoopie pie.
Eat the fish, bitch.
Eat the fish, bitch. I also quoted that this week. Mm.
Really?
I did. Yeah. For one of my other jobs that I work remotely for, I was talking about August Osage County. And I every time that play is brought up, I just have to at least say, even under my breath, eat the fish, bitch. You know?
Eat the fish, bitch. Yeah. The fish, bitch. What's the line at the end of, what is it, Act 1 or Act 2? It's like, I'm in charge now.
Yeah,
I'm running things now.
Yeah, I think it's, I'm in charge. Oh, it might be. I don't know. It's that is the sentiment. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. I think it is, I'm in charge now. Oh, God. Anytime anybody says anything about acting, I go, Amy Morton, I'm in charge now.
See, and as much as I love that, I still do default to Parker Posey, and I just scream, who's on top and who's on bottom now? Who's on top and who's on bottom now? You do know what I'm referencing, right?
That's not Waiting for Guffman, is it?
It is, but it's a deleted scene. It's her deleted monologue.
Oh, right. In her extended audition sequence.
Yeah, in her extended audition sequence, which if you have not watched out there, children, please watch. It is so amazing. She does this monologue from either this real or fake, or if it is fake, it seems so real, Lifetime-ish movie where she is talking to her incestual lover, like dying brother in a coma. And it is just so funny.
She's, yeah. For anyone who's desiring to be a comedic performer, actor, actress, just like watch 6 Parker Posey performances.
Yeah.
Best in Show, Waiting for Guffman, and I'm going to say it right here, right now, Josie and the Pussycats.
Oh, it's been a moment, like, but yes.
Yeah, well, like that movie is like kind of odd in its own way, but yeah. that is a performer taking weird material and making it work so well.
She is also brilliant in the first season of Search Party, which we've talked about before, because our previous guest, Natalie Walker, was in... well, she's in the second season, actually, but she talked about her audition for the first season.
Season.
John. Jesus.
Jesus. God damn it.
What is... don't do drugs, kids. That's the moral of the story.
Don't... Just also, don't get older. Just, like, don't do it, you know?
Just don't do it.
Just, like, stay in school till you die.
Please. For all
There's
of us.
There's nothing out here for you. There's nothing out here for you.
There's nothing out here but uppers, downers, and the occasional wicked lottery.
Yeah. And candy corn. What's that, Sharon?
Hey, candy corn.
No, but what's that, Sharon Needles as Michelle Visage? You should have seen me and Rue at the Limelight. We were in uppers, downers, and candy corn.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It's a, like such a random reference, but I use that all the time when I refer to, like, drugs. I'm always like, take some uppers, downers, and candy corn.
I'm into it. Matt, I feel like we have, once again, in our after our winter hiatus, we have successfully based a whole episode off of tangents.
I think we have. And I'm not mad about it. I'll most likely, you know, cut out everything that I said and just keep all of your likes. But other than that...
Hey, I mean, if you want to do a like count at the end of this episode, once it's edited, I'm into that. I think I did much better.
You did.
I mean...
You and I have the same thing, though, where we both... When we get really excited, we say like a lot because our mouth can't keep up with our brain.
No, without a doubt. Which, oh honey, sounds like my Friday night, oh honey. But
We ho honey.
Maybe we'll do a like count. If not, if someone wants to do a like count out there, I appreciate it. But I think it was only, I'm going to guess it was less than, it was five or under. I think I got a five and under. So let's hope.
I love your optimism there.
Yeah, it's hopeless optimism, but it is what it is.
So I think we'll on that hopeless optimism, we should close out before we get in down any worse rabbit holes today.
Yes. Completely. Let's stop this madness.
Stop this madness. So we did close out with Patty last week, which I went back to all the other episodes. We had never closed out with her.
That is insane to me. What are
you want to know why?
It's because we've been doing.
It's because we used her all the time as our.
Oh, Billy,
segue.
I beg to differ with you.
Yeah, Billy, I beg to differ with you. Yeah, it's so because of that she has been in every episode. She's just never been who closed us out. So that was the first time.
Well, you know who's closing us out today? Who I just decided, Vanessa Williams.
Vanessa Williams.
Yep, you guessed it, bitch.
Perfect. We'll do her. Stay with me, maybe, or her last minute. You know what? I'm going to make it a surprise for you.
Yeah, I want it to be a surprise. I would even love a little Our Little World, you know?
Our Little World?
Yeah. Her duet with Rapunzel.
I know what you're referring to.
Oh my God.
I'm not here.
Down bottom. okay, well,
first
on that
John,
note.
John, how dare. Do not box me in, John. I am a versatile actor.
Yeah. So is Jeremy Jordan. Okay. I love you all. I love you, Mathieu. I love you all. This has been Broadway Breakdown. I'm one of your hosts, Janowitz Skevich.
And I'm your other host, Matthew Ross Koplik I.
Oh, yeah. I forgot my middle name, but I did in the beginning. Okay, good for you. And play us out, Vanessa.
Thank you, Vanessa. Bye.
Bye.
And the moon grows dimmer, and the tides low ebb, and your breath comes faster, and you're aching to move, but you're caught in the web.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just Ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.